Roshamu Lukailecho Vosa Tob Zikna Israel al Melach Mitzrayim Ta'amarte Lov Hashem Lekehivrim Nikra Elainu Vatanilcho Ador Shleishes Yomim Bamidbar the Nizbchal Hashem Lekainu. The first time the Ribbono Shel Olam turns to Moshe and tells him to go to Paro, he tells him to say that what we Jews have to do is go out a 3-day journey through the wilderness, and there we will serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Faithfully, Moshe in fact does that. Vayomer Elokei HaIvrim Nikra Leinu Nelcho Nador Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar V'Nizbchal Hashem Elokeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu faithfully tells Paro the plan is to leave Egypt and go a 3-day journey through the wilderness. What in the world ever became of this plan? Here a promise was made, the word was given, that the intention is to go a 3-day journey through the wilderness. Whatever became of this? Rambam in the 8th parak of Yesedi HaTorah teaches us Moshe Rabbeinu lo yaminu bo Yisrael mipnei ha'oisa sha'osa shamamen al pi ha'oisa sheyesh bali bai doifi she'efshu sheyasa ha'ois balat v'kishuf. Our belief in Moshe Rabbeinu, says Rambam, was not based on the miracles that he performed, because only seriously misguided individuals set their religious and philosophical beliefs on basis of miracles. Miracles, tells us the Rambam, can be performed with black magic or with a sleight of hand. Rather, all of these miracles performed by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Sinai Desert were done for purely utilitarian reasons. It was not his intention in performing those miracles to authenticate his prophecy. There was a clear and present need to rid ourselves of the Egyptians, so Moshe Rabbeinu split the sickness up in a minute. Similarly, when we needed food, Moshe Rabbeinu brought us food from the skies. When there was thirst, had water come shooting out of a rock. Similarly, there was a need to rid ourselves of the nuisance of Korach. But all of these were purely utilitarian reasons. What then is the basis of our belief in Moshe Rabbeinu? Says Rambam, "Ubameh minu bo b'mamar har Sinai she'einenu ro'u v'loi zau, v'oznenu shomu v'loi acher ha'esh v'akeleis v'lachidim v'hu nigash al ha'rofil v'hakol medaber olav v'onu shomim." Our belief is based on the fact that it was our eyes, no one else's, our ears, not those of others, that witnessed Moshe Rabbeinu ascending the mountain, going into the thick cloud, and we heard the Ribbono Shel Olam himself saying, Moshe, Moshe, Leichem Oyolahem, Shuvu Lachem Olo Aleichem, V'atopola Modi Modi, V'adabro Elecho, Eskola Mitzvah V'achukim V'mishpatim V'asher Tzvam Deim. We heard the Ribbono Shel Olam charging Moshe with the responsibility of hearing all of these laws from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and subsequently to relay them to us. Therefore, the Torah emphasizes to us that our contact with the Ribbono Shel Olam revealing himself to Moshe was experienced by us directly. The people who accepted all of the responsibilities of the Torah did so in response to the fact that they had seen that it was Ribbono Shel Olam himself giving us these mitzvahs through Moshe. Minayin shemamad harsina levado hi harai l'nevu asoshiyei emes shem l'dayfi. What is the clear evidence that it is Sinai rather than miracles that is the basis of our knowledge of the authenticity of the Torah given to us by Moshe? Shenemar hine anochi boi lecha ba'av ha'onan ba'avur yishma ha'on b'dabri imoch v'gam b'chol yaminu la'olam. One of the psukim introducing theophany at Sinai says explicitly, I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, am going to appear to you, Moshe, through the thickness of the cloud, so that the entire nation should hear me talking to you, and they will therefore believe in you forevermore. Michlal shekoydim zeh, the clear implication of that is that before this, until this point, any belief they had was not one that would be everlasting, The belief they had until Sinai is one that might have perhaps been subjected to subsequent skepticism. Continues the Rambam, and he tells us, Nimtzu ele sheshulach lehem, heim ha'edim al nevuaso shehi emes. Those to whom Moshe Rabbeinu was sent with the Torah happened to have been co-equal witnesses with him on the divine origin of the Torah itself. וזה שאמר לו הקדוש ברוך הוא בתחילת נבואוסי בי שנוסם לרויסס לסויסם במצרים ואמר לו ושמל לכלך. It is this notion that miracles are not a basis of belief, and it is only our direct experience of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam giving Torah to us through Moshe that is the everlasting evidence. This is the meaning of the dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam from the start. Veshomu l'koylecha. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam said to Moshe that now that you've been equipped with miracles, the people will listen to you. Yodam Moshe Rabbeinu shamam and al pi oisus yesh b'libo daivi maharu machashev. Moshe Rabbeinu was well aware of the fact that reasonable men would be highly skeptical about miracles as something which authenticates a prophecy. For that reason, Moshe Rabbeinu did not at all want to go as a miracle performer to the Jewish people. He said openly, they're intelligent people, and they're therefore going to be highly skeptical about performance of miracles as a credential for authenticity. So the Rabbeinu Shem assured him that these miracles that he was performing in Egypt were only being used as a temporary trust-building measure, and that ultimately the everlasting irrefutable evidence would happen right here on this mountain Sinai. What happens at Sinai will remove all doubt and all basis for any type, form, or sort of skepticism. Rabbi Yisrael, the few words of the Rambam that we've just seen seem to have within themselves two internal contradictions. Let us take a look at the first one. The Rambam says, take a look at these words of the Rambam. I believe they're double underlined in these sources that you have. Elu ha'oisais einan ela ad sheyetsu mimitzrayim. The Rambam has emphasized to us the point that until Sinai, miracles are a perfectly legitimate temporary trust-building measure, and Sinai alone constitutes irrefutable evidence. If so, Rambam should have written something entirely different here. He should have written, Elu ha'eisais, einon elo ad sheyamdu al ahar. The achar sheyamdu al ahar yistalek hirhu shemachem rinacharecho. Seeing as your point, Rambam, is that it is Sinai that establishes the everlasting belief, and miracles beforehand were used only as a temporary trust-building measure, Rambam should have put the dividing line between the temporary trust-building measures on the one hand and Sinai on the other precisely at the point of Sinai. It should have been Achar sheyetsu, achar sheyamdu al ahar, yiskalek hirur. Instead, the Rambam writes as the dividing line, Elu ha'oiseis einan ela ad sheyetsu mimitzrayim. Miracles as a temporary trust-building measure are necessary only to what point in time? The exodus from Egypt. Perhaps it would be a rather substantial time gap between leaving Egypt on the one hand and standing at Sinai on the other. And Rabbi said, the fact is this contradiction appears not once in the few words that we have read of the Rambam, but twice. Let's go right back up to the very top of Hilchos Yisrei HaTorah Perek Ches, where we began. Moshe Rabbeinu lo ha'min m'pnei ha'oisa sha'osa. Rambam tells us that Moshe did not go ahead and win our belief with miracles, because that is dubious. There may be sleight of hand, there may be black magic. The miracles were done for purely utilitarian reasons. Not to authenticate his prophecy. Now let's take a look at what he says. Hayatzarich lashkias hamitzrim koras hayom vitzlilon b'sabo, sarachnu lamazon haridlanu asaman tzamu bakel lahen. Rambam lists over here three miracles which were purely for utilitarian reasons, and not trust-building measures, purely utilitarian. He lists three miracles that happen to have occurred before Sinai. The splitting of the sea, getting the water shooting out of the rock, getting the man down from the heavens. All three of these happen to have occurred prior to Theophany at Sinai. Rambam tells us explicitly that prior to Theophany at Sinai, miracles will indeed be used as a temporary trust-building measure, and Rambam makes it equally clear that it is Sinai that renders the use of miracles as a trust-building measure obsolete. All of these miracles that Rambam tells us took place in the desert and were useless because of the fact that there is a direct experience of God at Sinai, all of these happen to have occurred prior to Sinai. Now, after we walked through the miraculously split sea to freedom, the Torah says that we then believed in the Ribbono Shel Olam and in Moshe. Vaya'minu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. The following question is posed by this. Being as the miracles performed in Egypt had already won the people's trust, and the everlasting belief in Moshe was not achieved until Sinai, we have a right to ask the following elementary question. What in the world occurred at the sea which on the one hand is greater than the temporary trust-building measures that the miracles in Egypt constituted, and at the same time is less than the everlasting belief established in Sinai? Rambam just got through telling us that until Sinai, miracles were used to win their trust for a while. On the other hand, it is Sinai that establishes the everlasting belief in Moshe Rabbeinu and the authenticity of the Torah. What then occurred at the splitting of the sea could be what the Torah refers to when it says, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. Clearly that pasuk is telling us that at the splitting of the sea, they achieved a new level of belief, greater than that had been achieved beforehand by the miracles, and at the same time, it is less than the everlasting belief which is established at Sinai. What is that carefully calibrated level of belief between those two? Now, in presenting 10 of the Aseves HaBrit Dibros, Kibud Av, and Shabbos, the Torah uses the phrase Ka'asher Tzivcha, as you have already been commanded. This appears in the second set of Dibros, the way the Dibros are presented to us in Sefer Dvarim, in Va'eschana. Twice it says Ka'asher Tzivcha, it says as you've already been commanded, in reference to the commandments of Shabbos and that of Kibud Av. What could this mean, as you've already been commanded? Clearly it could not have meant as you've been commanded in the Ten Commandments as originally given at Sinai, for the simple reason that if so, Ka'asher Tzivcha, as you've already been commanded, would have referred to, not two, but all of the Ten. For this reason, Rav Yehuda tells us in Sanhedrin Nun Vav Amid Beis, that when it says that Kibud Av and Shabbos had already been given Ka'asher Tzivcha, it means Ka'asher Tzivcha B'mara, as you've already been commanded, all the way back at Mara. Now, 2 points. First of all, being as Mara is before even the first set of Aseres HaDibros, the ones in Yisro, we have a right to ask, why does it not also say in the first set of Ten Commandments next to these two, Kibud Av and Shabbos, Ka'asher Tzivcha, as you've already been commanded back at Mara? And another question we might ask is the following. Are mitzvahs given before Sinai binding altogether? The Rambam teaches us in the seventh parak of Chulin in his Perush HaMishnayos that we do not do bris milah because of the fact that it was given to Avraham Avinu, nor in fact do we observe the prohibition of Gira Nasha because of the fact that Yaakov was commanded. Both of these commandments, tells us the Rambam, are binding because of the fact that they were given to us at mitzvahs at Sinai. Seeing that Rambam has now told us that these mitzvahs, bris, milah on the one hand, and Gira Nasha on the other hand, are not binding because they were given to Avram and Yaakov respectively, but only because they were given at Sinai, we must wonder why are the mitzvahs given at Mara considered to be binding? Clearly the words ka'asher tzidcha do not mean as has been optional until now. Everybody knows that in the wording of the Torah, ka'asher tzidcha, tzidcha means a 100% binding commandment. Why is it that we consider the mitzvahs given at Mara to be binding, whereas the ones that were given, for instance, Avraham Avinu and Yaakov, were not at all binding? Okay. Yitzias Mitzrayim happens to have had two short-term goals. The first of these two short-term goals is Tavdu Nesalekim Alahar Hazeh. You will serve me on this mountain, Sinai. This, of course, refers to Ma'amad Sinai. The fact is, Yetzias Mitzrayim also had a more immediate goal. Ne'elchona derech shloishes yamim ba'midbar v'nizbucha la'Hashem aleikenu. The more immediate goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was giving of mitzvahs at Mara. In both cases, the serving, it speaks both of serving the Rebbeinu Shalom, Tavdu Nosi, Ne'elchona v'nizbucha, in both cases, the serving of the Rebbeinu Shalom consists of accepting mitzvahs. Now, this giving of mitzvahs at Mara can in no way be binding without first establishing to entire Am Yisrael the authenticity of its divine origin. Before Kriyas Yamsuf, the Jews were told, Hisyatzvu Uru, present yourselves and watch. Chazal tell us that this means, Ein Yitziva B'chol Makam Ruach HaKedesh. They were being told that you're going to experience Nevuah at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, further emphasizing the prophetic revelation as the real major event at Kriyas Yamsuf. Chazal tell us, Rasa Shifcha Layam, Mashaloi Ro'a Yechezkel V'chol Shar Hanavim. The knowledge that was achieved in that revelation, Vayaminu B'Hashem U'V'Moshe Avdo, meant that they could no longer honestly question two points. A, they could no longer honestly question the existence of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Secondly, they could no longer question the faithfulness of Moshe Rabbeinu to the word of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Vaya'aminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. It is this knowledge achieved at the splitting of the sea that makes the mitzvahs at Mara binding. It is from that point and on, Vaya'aminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo, that miracles became totally obsolete as even a trust, temporary trust-building measure. Consequently, the list of miracles that were not meant to prove any point starts with Kriyas Yamsuf. This knowledge made the law-giving at Mara 3 days later binding, hence the Torah says, Ka'asher Tzivcha when, referring to it. And it is for this reason that the Rambam writes, Eilu ha'osos einan ela ad sheyetzu mimitzrayim. Miracles as a temporary trust-building measure are only to the point of exodus from Mitzrayim, because it is at the point of exodus, Kriyas Yamsuf, that they experience a nevuah which gives them absolute certainty both about the existence of the Rebbeinu Yoelam and the fidelity of Moshe Rabbeinu to the words given to him to transmit in turn to us. And it is again the knowledge that they achieved at Mara that made the law, it is the knowledge and the nevuah that they achieved at Kriyas Yamsuf that made the law giving at Mara 3 days later binding. Therefore, the Torah says, Ka'asher Tzivcha, when referring to it. Because of the fact that there was a Neinu Ro'inu V'loi Zaras, Neinu Shamu V'loi Acher, because of the fact that our eyes directly saw, our ears experienced all the way back at the splitting of the sea, it is for that reason that the Torah can refer to Mara as Kasher Tzidcha. If you will take a look at Parshas Maaseh, when it gives the list of the travelings and the encampments, goes over and over, Vayachanu, Vayisu, Vayisu, Vayachanu, you will find two things to be true. First of all, when the Torah tells us about a trip between two points, the Torah, first of all, never lets us know the length of the trip. It never tells us how many days' journey was between one point and the next. In addition to not telling us the length of a trip between two points, the Torah also does not tell us another thing. It never says they went from one point to the other, going through a third point. It never does that. Vayis uvayachanu simply mentions 2 points. Never does it mention the length of the journey, nor in fact does it specify a point that they traversed between two encampments. Rabbosai, with Mara, however, it makes an exception to both of these rules. Vayisu mipi hachiros. They left Egypt pi hachiros. Vayavru basol chayom hamidbara. Vayilchu derech shloishes yom in the midbar esam. Vayachanu bamara. They went out of Chiros, which was their last point in Egypt. They went through the split sea. They walked a 3-day journey through the wilderness. Then they encamped at Mara. By telling us this, the Torah is explaining that Mara indeed achieved the first goal that had been promised by Moshe Rabbeinu from the start. Immediately after a 3-day journey through the wilderness, there's going to be a service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and like Sinai, it turned out that the service was an acceptance of mitzvahs. Additionally, when the Torah goes ahead and puts Kriyas Yamsuf as part and parcel of Mara, it is telling us that Kriyas Yamsuf and Mara happen to constitute one indivisible event. It was the knowledge gained at the splitting of the sea that made the truth of Mara's mitzvahs binding and compelling. Emphasizing the similarity to Ma'amar HaSinai, the Torah uses the same words at Mara for their acceptance, Shamaya Tishma, and it also uses the identical words for the spiritual growth and achievement, Nisohu. Both of these lawgivings, the one at Mara and the one at Sinai, happen to be based on our first-hand knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam and of Moshe's fidelity, and it's for that reason that Mara and Sinai are equally binding. They are distinguished, however, by the fact that at Sinai we were not only obligated, but we were assured. We were given at Sinai not only mitzvahs, but we were given a promise. The promise that we were given at Sinai was that this particular experience would be of everlasting impact. Hinei anochi ba'elecha ba'avre'onen ba'avur yishma om bedabrimach v'gam b'choya aminu la'olam. Those words constitute a promise. This particular event, the one at Sinai, is going to have an eternal impact, an everlasting effect. No such guarantee was ever made at Mara. So ultimately, it is Ma'amar HaSinai that perpetuates Mara. Now, although Mara predates even the first Aseres HaDibros, it is the ones in Devarim that are linked to Mara by the words, as you have been commanded, Ka'asher Tzivcha. Why is it that it is Davka, the Shabbos and the Kiburav of the second tablets given in Devarim that are linked to Mara rather than the first set of Aseres Dibros as they appear in Yisro? In order to understand this, we are going to first have to understand the nature of Sefer Devarim as reflected in its distinct characteristics. Let us take a look at a number of features which are particular and distinct to Sefer Devarim. One idea that is particular to Devarim is Dibro Torah Keneged Yetzer Hara. The Torah, within very specified limits, accommodates the soldier who takes notice of the comely captive. Now, what did the Torah tell us until Devarim to do when a person notices someone that they ought not to have noticed in the first place? What did the Torah tell us? How do you handle the situation? Well, we say twice every day what the Torah tells us. All you have to do is get total control of your eyes, of your thoughts, of your behavior, and to the extent to which you get control of your eyes, your thoughts, and behavior, to that extent, and only to that extent, are you going to be holy. The notion of steering in the direction of the skid in order to get control of the situation happens to be totally unheard of until Sefer Devarim. And the truth of the matter is, this notion, Dibro Keneged Yetzer Hara, accommodating man's less lofty leanings happens to be expressed in other matters in Dvarim. There's not particular to that case of the Kamali captive of the Yafas Toar. It happens to be expressed in reference to the very institution of government. We are warned by Reb Nahiroi that Loinem LaParshazu Ella Kenega Tahum Masan. The entire idea of having governmental authority not stemming from either a Navi or a Sanhedrin happens to be an accommodation of our less lofty leanings. Loinem LaParshazu Ella Kenega Tahum Masan. It is intuitively obvious that every governmental institution exists only to the extent to which we fail morally. Again, government institutions exist only to the extent to which we are moral failures. If, for instance, tomorrow morning everybody wakes up a conscientious, sane, and disciplined driver, no more state troopers, no more Mishteret HaTznuah, gone are their cars, their prisons, their guns, all of these inelegant instruments of coercion. A morally successful society happens to have no need whatsoever for the inelegant instruments of coercion. In fact, the very idea that a police force is necessary for the functioning of a Beis Din is totally unheard of until Sefer Dvarim. Now, there is another feature that we have in Sefer Dvarim that we find absolutely nowhere else. We find punishments out of proportion to the severity of the wrongdoing. The Ramban tells us that four of the capital punishments in Sefer Dvarim, Edim Zaymimim, Zakim Mamre, Mesis, Ben Seirah, Umayra, all of these death penalties are out of proportion to the actual severity of the wrongdoing. They are imposed rather because of the need for a forceful deterrent of these particular crimes. Now this idea of punishments out of proportion to the severity of the wrongdoing, which we are doing for purely utilitarian reasons, this is totally antithetic to the precise commensurability to the wrongdoing inherent in the idea of kapara, which happens to be the primary objective of punishment. So another thing we find, in addition to the Torah's accommodating man's less lofty leanings, another distinct feature of Dvarim, is we happen to find punishments out of proportion to the severity of the wrongdoing. A third thing we find in Dvarim is that the Torah suddenly addresses very, very different circumstances that we did not deal with until Sefer Dvarim. What does this mean? You see, before Sefer Dvarim, we could rely upon witnesses for practical information in court cases. Until Sefer Dvarim, there were other coping devices upon which we could really, really faithfully rely. We could count on a Navi for truth in sublime matters, just as we could count on witnesses for absolute truth in mundane matters. In fact, we could also rely upon a Sanhedrin to faithfully execute their lofty calling and give us the Psak Dinim that we needed and all the Torah guidance that we require. All of a sudden, we come to Sefer Dvarim. Surprise. Your witnesses are liars. The Navi is a charlatan. And your Beis Din is paralyzed by internal dissension, Azok and Mamre. This is true not only of our social devices upon which we could rely until Sefer Dvarim, but personal institutions, those too are suddenly crippled by human failing. Until Sefer Dvarim, there was Kedushin, which provided an Eishes Chayil, and there was Kiburav. All of a sudden, instead of the Eishes Chayil, you have the worthless wench. Instead of Kiburav, you have the pilfering punk, the Ben Seirer U Meira. All of the coping devices, which were so reliable, both on the social level and on the personal level, suddenly we approach Sefer Dvarim, and surprise, our own failures can absolutely cripple every single one of these coping devices that seem to work so beautifully and efficiently before Sefer Dvarim. The world before Sefer Dvarim was not a perfect place, but it worked. In Sefer Dvarim, it does not. All three of these features, the accommodation of the Yetzer Hara, punishments of undue severity, and the collapse of our most basic coping devices express the distinct nature of Dvarim as explained to us by the Maharal of Prague. Maharal of Prague in Tiferes Yisrael Perek Mem Gimel teaches us what is the essence of Sefer Dvarim. Ki arba chumashim kreivim heim letzad neisen ha-teira ve'ilu Sefer Dvarim karav hu letzad makabalei ha-teira. Maharal of Prague teaches us that Breishis Shmeis Vayikra Dvarim, Breishis Shmeis Vayikra Bamidbar express only the pristine character of the divine source of Teva. Dvarim, on the other hand, reflects also the nature of those to whom the Teva is given. Sefer Dvarim gives us a picture of what the Teva is going to look like when it finds itself amongst us who are human, all too human. The Shabbos that appears in the Aseres Hadibros of Shmos is characterized by the same lofty kedusha and bracha with which it was endowed all the way back in Vayechulu. What about the Shabbos afternoon nap? You're not going to find that in Shmos. You're going to find that instead in the Aseres Hadibros of Dvarim Laman Yanuach Avdochava Amoscha. The pristine truth of Torah tells us that by asserting control over our thoughts and over our behavior, we're going to achieve real personal kedusha. In Sefer Dvarim, on the other hand, we are told that when we fail to do that, there happens to be a plan for damage limitation. We're going to have to, after we fail, should we fail, steer in the direction of the skid. Dibulat Torah keneged yetzer hara. In the first four Sfarim, every punishment is precisely commensurate to the wrongdoing. In Sefer Dvarim, we've suddenly been told that there may be overriding societal needs that will impose upon us the necessity for achieving a more imperfect justice. In the first four Sfarim, witnesses are honest, Nevi'im are authentic, Dayanim properly discharge the duties of their lofty calling, and our personal life, Kedas Meisha v'Yisrael, can be taken for granted. In Dvarim, on the other hand, we suddenly find ourselves facing such chaos that the Maharal's phrase, Bechina Acheres Mitzah HaMekabel, actually sounds euphemistic. The Ramban tells us that our mitzvahs have two dimensions, min ha'olam v'yad ha'olam. Besides expressing a transcendent and infinite wisdom far too great for this world to contain, the mitzvahs also happen to have this worldly wisdom and provide us with the ways to navigate our way through this world. And there's wisdom in the Torah which is true to the nature of this world and the limitations of this world. At Mora, we do not learn so much about the otherworldly wisdom of the Torah, but instead we learn about the worldly wisdom of the Torah and the utility of the Torah. Whereas Theophany at Sinai taught us that in his essence the Rabbeinu Shalom is well beyond the limits of the human intellect and imagination, at Mara the Rabbeinu Shalom simply presented himself to us as a physician whose teachings are rich in this worldly therapeutic wisdom. The Torah given at Sinai is best appreciated by men like Rabbi Akiva, Rashi, Rambam, the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Akiva Eger, and Rabbi Chaim Brisker. The main beneficiaries of the law giving at Mara, on the other hand, are people whose spirits are broken by slavery and compromised by their own ill-considered actions. The reason we start reading Sefer Dvarim in Tisha B'Av, and we complete it, Hashan Rab, Shmini Atzeres, is because Sefer Dvarim finds us at our lowest. Whereas Theophany at Sinai reaches man at his pinnacle, Sefer Dvarim finds man in a state of Churban and provides the means by which man can again lift himself up out of a very, very low place. In Mara, the Roi Feilu Shvurei Leiv gives us Shabbos not as a metaphysical reality encompassing the universe, but as the succor and sustenance without which our burdens would simply be totally unbearable. The civil law, as presented in Mishpatim, enable us to reach for the ultimate perfection of the Tzelem Elokim. The Dinam et Mara simply aim at minimizing social strife. The Torah given to us at Sinai reaches man at his pinnacle. At Mara, the Torah comes down to a society very, very much compromised. Now, Mara is not the last time we're going to see the Torah reaching us as human, all too human. And Devarim again will be given mitzvahs, ka'asher tzivcha, b'mara.